casa del presidente Donald Trump sobre recortar las ayudas y las advertencias de autoridades nacionales que les pedían no hacerlo.
La situación es que ya migramos. Desde que nosotros dejamos todo tirado en nuestras casas, salimos de Honduras, Trump puede decir lo que diga, si nos regresan, nos regresamos, así de sencillo. Nosotros ya somos presa fácil para los pandilleros en nuestros países.
Mientras tanto, el presidente guatemalteco Jimmy Morales, aliado de Trump, arremetió contra su homólogo diciendo que ninguna ayuda puede ser condicionada ni puede ser demandada.
Y sabemos que realmente es un drama que viven las personas en este momento, porque realmente tienen que salir en masa, porque ya no logran más a vivir en su propio país por causa de la pobreza y de la violencia.
Al paralelo de estos eventos, un primer grupo de casi un millar de hondureños se refugió en la Casa del Migrante, auspiciada por la Iglesia Católica en el centro de la capital guatemalteca. Su objetivo es recobrar fuerzas y seguir hacia la frontera con México en un camino al norte, ya que creen que regresar a su país es equivalente a la muerte.
Primeramente Dios, que el presidente pues de Estados Unidos los tenga a puertas abiertas para poder entrar, ¿verdad? Ese es el propósito de nosotros, de que no es a fuerza, sino que la gente sea tocada a la voluntad de Dios.
México, otro país que está en el camino hacia la supuesta tierra prometida de los migrantes, anunció que ha reforzado su frontera con Guatemala. Pero parece que nada, incluso las amenazas de arresto y deportaciones, pueden parar a estos migrantes, ya que, como dicen algunos, llegaron al límite en sus países de origen, donde debido a la falta de empleo, seguridad y progreso, no tienen nada que perder. Silvia Calderón con información de Ramín Bajitzadeh, Hispan TV Noticias.
En Brasil, Fernando Haddad y Jair Bolsonaro se disputan la presidencia el próximo 28 de octubre en una segunda vuelta que preocupa a ciudadanos que todavía recuerdan más de 20 años de dictadura militar. Haddad dice que no es ninguna exageración tildar a su adversario como un ultraderechista.
Aquí, infortunadamente, llegamos a esta situación en que alguien de extrema derecha participa de la segunda vuelta, y esto es muy grave, porque todo el mundo sabe lo que Bolsonaro piensa sobre la democracia. Él es una persona que cultiva la dictadura, pero no solo la dictadura en un sentido genérico del término. Promueve la tortura practicada durante la dictadura. Incluso critica la dictadura por tener realizado apenas torturas y no haber matado. Defiende la cultura de la violencia al decir a una compañera del parlamento que solo no la violaba porque ella no lo merecía. Cosas de ese tipo dan los peores ejemplos. En 28 años del Congreso Nacional, él no entregó absolutamente nada por el país, ni siquiera una buena idea. No aprobó nada relevante.
Las declaraciones de Haddad están acompañadas de reportes de prensa de un Bolsonaro congresista y agresivo en los años 90. Escuchemos.
Yo daría un golpe en el mismo día. Perdóname, pero por el voto no se cambia nada en este país. Nada, absolutamente nada. Solo vamos a cambiar cuando partimos para una guerra civil aquí dentro, haciendo el trabajo que el régimen militar no hizo, matándonos 30.000, empezando por el presidente Fernando Henrique Cardoso. No lo dejaremos afuera. No, si van a morir unos inocentes, no hay problema. En cualquier guerra mueren muchos inocentes. Yo incluso prefiero desde que maten a otros 30.000.
América Latina sufrió por décadas las dictaduras militares que, en nombre del anticomunismo, dejaron una estela de dolor y lágrimas en el continente. Veamos un ejemplo en Guatemala.
Es el sepelio de Lucio Geroni.
And coming down the pike on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to, hopefully, 101.3 FM, or an archive thereof. It's the October 18th, 2018 show of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. We're going to be covering the recent closure of San Lorenzo Park, shutdown of the River Street campground, and the apparently upsurge of citations against people for trespassing and being in a closed area, which means to say they're sleeping, but goodness gracious, Andy Mills and the Parks and Rec don't want to go after people for that. They might get sued. So instead, they say, well, you just happen to be in a park, and therefore we're going to arrest you for that because it's nighttime and after closing hours. Also, numerous announcements and, perhaps a few surprises, trying to get a hold of a couple of people by phone, see if we do. And if we do, you'll get to hear them.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And to begin the merry chase this evening, we're going to talk about a couple of events coming up. If you're listening to this at 6 o'clock on Thursday, the 18th of October, there are a few forums coming right at you. At 7 o'clock until 9 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, there is a community forum on police use of force. That's going to be organized by the Santa Cruz chapter of the usually rather quiescent ACLU of Northern California. Actually, the Northern California chapter is a little more active than the Santa Cruz chapter, but I guess we're talking about the Santa Cruz chapter. It's a community forum with speakers who are supposedly prominent experts on the topic. Oakland civil rights attorney John Burris, whose work encompasses police misconduct, excessive force cases, including Rodney King and all. And coming down the pike on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to, hopefully, 101.3 FM, or an archive thereof. It's the October 18th, 2018 show of Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. We're going to be covering the recent closure of San Lorenzo Park, shutdown of the River Street campground, and the apparently upsurge of citations against people for trespassing and being in a closed area, which means to say they're sleeping, but goodness gracious, Andy Mills and the Parks and Rec don't want to go after people for that. They might get sued. So instead, they say, well, you just happen to be in a park, and therefore we're going to arrest you for that because it's nighttime and after closing hours. Also, numerous announcements and, well, perhaps a few surprises, trying to get a hold of a couple of people by phone, see if we do. And if we do, you'll get to hear them.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And to begin the merry chase this evening, we're going to talk about a couple of events coming up. If you're listening to this at 6 o'clock on Thursday, the 18th of October, there are a few forums coming right at you. At 7 o'clock until 9 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, there is a community forum on police use of force. That's going to be organized by the Santa Cruz chapter of the usually rather quiescent ACLU of Northern California. Actually, the Northern California chapter is a little more active than the Santa Cruz chapter, but I guess we're talking about the Santa Cruz chapter. It's a community forum with speakers who are supposedly prominent experts on the topic. Oakland civil rights attorney John Burris, whose work encompasses police misconduct, excessive force cases, including Rodney King and Oscar Grant's family. King, as you recalled, was beaten by L.A. police back in 1992, I think, or 91. And Oscar Grant was shot dead by a BART cop in turn of the new year, 2010, I believe. Although I can never be clear on those New Year's dates. That's one of the panelists. Another one is Santa Cruz public defender and recent candidate for Superior Court judge, Zach Schwartzbach. I've never met him, never heard him talk, but generally public defenders are sort of a better bet in some sense for at least the theoretical examination of abuses against the police. If you actually want help when one has abused you and you're looking for legal assistance, don't get your hopes too high. On the other side of the panel is Santa Cruz Police Chief Andy Mills. He's the, I don't need to provide you with specific answers to your public records request. I'll just kind of march around in my four-star uniform. Saw him the other day at the Public Safety Committee. He had not too much to say to me. Maybe I'm unduly miffed, but I'm actually referring to his non-performance on email interaction back and forth. Then there's Pacific Grove Police Chief Amy Christie, and Fred Smith, author of Blue Lights in Your Mirror, will moderate. Here's a little more from the Santa Cruz Indy Bay description. The use of often deadly force by police has been an increasingly visible and urgent issue in recent years, with the deaths of Laquine McDonald, Stefan Clark, Michael Brown, Eric Garner, and many others, many of them, if not all of them, African-American. The forum will center on AB 931, the bill by California Assembly Member Shirley Weber that was introduced this past legislative session and will be taken up again next year. Among other things, it would set a higher standard for law enforcement officers to use lethal force against civilians, requiring that the use of lethal force be necessary and not merely reasonable. The panelists promised to explore all sides of this important issue. And, of course, if people were really concerned about this issue locally, they would talk about the use of lethal force by Santa Cruz Police Chief Andy Mills' predecessor, Kevin Vogel, or I should say his police force, virtually all of which remains in play, in the killing of Sean Arlt. And that has never been adequately explained, documented, or researched and investigated. All of the records that I've requested from the police department have been denied, such as the witness statements, the DA's investigation report, things of that sort. And I have, of course, a variety of questions, which I've talked about on the show, about my concerns about the Santa Cruz Police Department that I've requested of Chief Andy Mills. And he has replied with generalities and reassurances, generally speaking. Not in all cases, but generally speaking. And I had hoped to come to this forum with a couple of other conscience and action people to raise some issues with Mills directly about local Santa Cruz activity, not just a theoretical legislative bill coming up again for the usual legislative whoopity-doo in the next year. And it's not a bad bill in the sense that it makes some minor limitations on police use of lethal force, but unless the police are actually held accountable with prosecutions for killers and beaters and civil rights violators, you're not going to get any change, no matter how much you train the police to do or how many forums you have on the subject. That's been my view. And I've had some very specific criticisms of the Santa Cruz Police Force. I'll probably repeat them before the end of this show. And you can also find them online at the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website and also on the Santa Cruz Indy Media website. Anyway, that's 7 to 9 tonight. Get down there if you're still listening to this on October 18th and hear what the bigwigs have to say. And maybe ask some pointed questions of your own if they let you get past the 3x5 index cards, that is. So, again, just briefly, what the kinds of questions I've asked of the Santa Cruz Police Department, which aren't going to be coming up this forum, but which might, if somebody dared to speak from the audience or buttonhole Mills before or after or raise a placard or circulate a petition, I don't know, whatever, I don't know, lead a march to the police station, Open the books on the use of tasers, batons, guns, pepper spray, chokeholds, and pain compliance. I specifically asked Mills in a written email, public records request, to detail the use of all these things, when they were used, against whom, what kind of injuries were created, and what kind of crimes were alleged, and what officers were involved. I got a complete blank on that request. I also suggested in this flyer cutting back a bloated police budget for the largest development in the state for a city of 60,000. I say the largest department in the state. Police department takes up about a fourth to a third of the city's budget, and they spend their time, or in the past, they were trooping around after homeless people in the Poganip and drug war activities. A lot of stuff that didn't involve things like assaults. There's, I suppose, bike thefts and car thefts and things that are seriously, of general interest to the community. But the police budget is huge compared to the social services budget. And you'll get told, of course, oh, that's the job of the county. And, of course, no, it's the job of anybody who's in, who wants to see where the money goes properly, believes in that, in so designating it. I also suggested demilitarize and reform the SCPD from its flash mob, shock and awe over kill tactic, by which I refer to the arrival of numerous police officers, six cops to deal with one person urinating on the lawn of the Loudoun Nelson, three or four police showing up to intimidate a person shouting downtown. It's essentially, I guess it's designed to quell things through a kind of gentle, fearful persuasion rather than going through the paperwork and the cost of citing or jailing someone. And also, it presents a sort of a chilling lesson to anybody watching. It's kind of a police state-ish sort of thing. I also suggested refusing drug war money, military equipment, drone, face, and license surveillance technology. This kind of self-explanatory. It hasn't been taken up by the city council, nor by council members Crone and Brown, as far as I know, those are the great liberals, nor by candidates Drew Glover and Justin Cummins. Require all Santa Cruz police officers to live in the city, if not the local districts they police. Well, if they're going to be members of the community, they should be members of the community. In fact, I think members of the community have a much better sense of what's going on in their community than out-of-town officers. Now, I suppose in a way, if we're talking about right-wing vigilantes who regard excluding homeless people from their community as a part of their job, this can be used to bite me in the ass. But I think it's still generally true, I think. End abuse citations, stayaways, and arrests of poor and homeless people for status crimes, i.e. the crime of being homeless. It's happened to some extent with sleeping tickets and camping citations, though not entirely. But instead, there's been a rise in the use of trespass and being in a park after dark tickets, which is being used instead. And essentially has what the same, I think, the same purpose and the same impact. Focus on white-collar crime, abuses against workers and tenants, rape, and real crimes. No stats on that, not very much deep investigation, can't tell you much about that, but I certainly hope that's where they're focusing. Swift suspension and prosecution of criminal cops with a clear histories of violence or abuse, that is not being done, either locally or nationally generally, with the most, unless there's some glaring example caught on video. And even then, it takes years, as you can see in the case of the Chicago killer cop, who I just recently got, sentenced to 7 years or something for shooting somebody 17 times, a black guy, actually. There are more specific demands. Speed accessibility to withheld records to monitor class and racial profiling, which means the police should provide you with the summaries that they're supposedly supposed to give the city council, naming how many people of a certain race were ticketed on a certain for a certain crime, how many people of a certain class, i.e. homeless, were ticketed, in order to indicate whether there seems to be a disposition to go after these folks. But you will not get that information unless you painfully, ticket by ticket, go through these citations, which we had to do year after year as hufsters. establish open meetings with minority, poor, youth, student, disabled, and worker groups to review and assess complaints independent of the behind-closed-doors SCBD in-house process. Mills, I guess, prides himself, that's Chief Andy Mills of the SCPD, on being more accessible than his predecessor, and he is. There's no question about that, although not to me and not to those critics who've kind of made it clear they're not satisfied with a friendly handshake, a pat on the back, and a jovial, how do you do, nice to talk to you, so forth. I can't get a response from him, even when I see him in public. I can't get much of a response. Hold open meetings with San Lorenzo Park campers, as well as others living outside, to determine wants, needs, and concerns around current police behavior. That was proposed a year ago when there were campers in San Lorenzo Park. Today the park is fenced off. Yes, apparently that happened last night, is what I was told, or maybe it was the night before last. And it's supposedly for maintenance and safety. I'm still waiting to get a report from my secret sources. But it seems to be happening coincidentally at the same time that the River Street campground is closing, which tends to me to indicate there's something meaningful happening here which has to do with making sure the homeless don't migrate, as they did last year with actually the encouragement of Mills, to the San Lorenzo campground. I should say the San Lorenzo benchlands, which became a campground, and which actually worked pretty damn well, considering, better than the River Street campground for a much larger number of people, although admittedly for those who are so concerned about drug use, there was a lot of drug use, drug sales back and forth, just like there is in the broader middle class society. But we don't allow those homeless people to do that because that's naughty, they're wrong, they do it publicly, and it's shocking. It's okay to die privately but not publicly, or to be abusive privately but not publicly. In a way, I kind of understand this. In another sense, it's blatant hypocrisy and discrimination. I also propose in this flyer to reveal all present and prospective agreements with other police agencies, re-demonstrations. No such thing has been done by Mills. To institute regular record-keeping of all police stops involving detention or citation. Not done. Reveal all surveillance devices that regularly spy on law-abiding locals without a warrant and not involved in a criminal investigation. That has been specifically ducked month after month by the city and finally ignored, even though there are clearly such devices in places like the police station, in the public area of the police station, the jail, around City Hall. And it's only, I think, a reasonable response to say where these public devices are. It doesn't mean they necessarily have to be removed, but one would want to know how the records are being retained, where they go, what the story is with this. And I haven't been able to get a peep out of our liberal, progressive city council, city manager, and city police chief. Demand Chief Andy Mills release all reports on the Arlt Slang and the ICE-DHS collusion. That's the collusion with the immigration snatchers and the immigration false imprisoners who seize families, separate them, and so forth. And did this last, I guess it was the February before last, and under Chief Vogel, who then revealed he had a immigration control enforcement guy with a desk in the police department for 9 years. He just hadn't happened to mention. I wanted to get the specific correspondence on this to understand where it went, who was lying. And this, I mean, Vogel's getting paid a nice fat pension and is still mouthing off from his retired position on his views, which he has a right to do, but does he have a right to get huge amounts of money if he was engaged essentially in either abusive or criminal behavior? At least it should be known to the community what's going on and how far that corruption has actually permeated the police department. End business as usual militarization, overkill policing tactics, ever more invasive surveillance, swoop and snoop license plate readers, and protest punisher Bearcat. Now, the Bearcat actually has been used numerous times, and that history was presented at the Public Safety Committee on Friday. sorry, Monday, last Monday. But I haven't gotten a hold of that, or if I've got, sorry, I have it, but I haven't run my eyes over it to see what it all went down to, and in order to investigate it. Maybe on Sunday, maybe some years hence, who knows. I'm feeling mighty tired at the moment. And finally, demand City Manager Martin Bernal publicly investigate documented Santa Cruz police abuse of homeless people like Officer Vasquez's sidewalk smashdown of Richard Hardy, which was way back in 2013, 5 years ago, but never apparently received any clear consequences. And if it did, we didn't get to hear about it. And, of course, that's now, I think, a court decision which made all that secret in 2006, the Copley decision, may have been overruled by legislative action this year, which Brown has signed, allowing for public records to be revealed around shootings and maybe instances of police brutality. Again, all this could be more openly discussed and certainly should be openly challenged by our local ACLU, but I don't recall having heard too much about that. Anyway, go down 7 to 9 tonight if you're interested to the Resource Center for Nonviolence right across from the Hotel Paradox on Ocean Street. I think it's 612 Ocean or 610 Ocean, something like that. And check it out.
There's a place called Real America. I heard about it from a rich politician. It magically appears, especially in election years. Life is good in Real America. It's like living with a thousand Sarah Palins. Stroll Main Street hand in hand and take a ride to fantasy land. Let's go to Real America. Happy Meal America, where we can be proud, we don't talk well. Meet me in Real America. Michael Steele America, at the corner of Norman and Rockwell. Things are real in Real America. And up is down and Joe the plumber is a genius. They've got just two stoplights and no one steals and no one fights for civil rights. Let's go to Real America. Oldsmobile America. Shove the kids in the back seat and bring them along to Real America. Spin the big wheel, America. All done up in denim and gingham. I don't know who they got there, but I can tell you who's not there. Ain't none of them Ivy League elites, not a one of them San Francisco treats. Ain't none of them wine and tofu snobs, not a one of them Daily Show whack jobs. Ain't none of them corporate media sluts, not a one of them academia nuts. Ain't none of them friggin' Francophiles, not a one of them New York non-Gentiles. I believe in Real America. And so I vote against my economic interest. Let's go to Real America. Deal or no deal, America. I can't tell you how happy I'd be if I get to go to Real America. Norman Vincent Peale, America, where Ronald Reagan is deified. Real America. Uh-huh. Real America. Well, duh.
where no one uses profanity. Cause they're so full of Sean Hannity.
And that was Real America from the Roy Zimmerman album, Real American, and that was way back in 2010. I'm a little wary of kind of the Roy Zimmerman line here. I mean, it sounds a little bit like the Hillary Clinton line. You know, they're all those people who voted for Trump are just deplorables, you know, that sort of thing. When actually they're people who wanted just to kick the ass away from the corporate folks who were supporting the Obama regime and are now supporting the Trump regime. And the foreign wars, the flight of foreign capital to other countries, the flight of jobs, it's the flight of capital to the rich. All that is hurting people. And Democrats aren't doing anything about it. I mean, you have these, you know, identity issues, gay and lesbian, African-American, all of which I support. But the fact that you're going to elect someone with a certain skin color or sexual preference has nothing to do with whether they're going to be standing with you on basic economic interests, which most of these politicians aren't in the Democrats and the Republican parties, and probably in some of the other parties as well, partially because of the party structure of these parties rather than because of the ideology. Anyway, more announcements. So tonight, as well as at the police forum, you might want to consider another opportunity. Here's an article that talks about it. Housing crisis impacting city and county employees survey reveals. And what we have here, if I can work it out on this computer, having a little trouble doing. Is an event that's happening also at 7 o'clock at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium. No Place Like Home, Building Local Housing Solutions for All. And it's going to be an event. We'll focus on policy proposals, including rent control, just cause eviction, and a panel discussion with local and regional housing experts. Spanish translation available and refreshments, there you go, will be provided. We want to share the findings from our latest study, which looks at the experiences of both renters and homeowners who directly serve our community, said Steve McKay, associate professor of sociology who leads or co-leads No Place Like Home with sociology professor Miriam Greenberg. Previous surveys documented the impact on renters and the unequal burdens experienced by county residents. In this installment, McKay and Greenberg collaborated with Service Employee National Union Local 521, whose members include city and county employees, as well as employees of two of the city's largest nonprofits, Community Bridges and Salud para la Gente. We talked to a cross-section of the people who make Santa Cruz run, from bus drivers and social workers to dental assistants and rangers, said McKay. In addition to nearly 500 surveys, they surveyed or conducted 30 in-depth interviews in an attempt to document impacts as well as opinions regarding a range of proposed policy solutions. Sorry, it's getting a little blah, blah there. Survey results provide a snapshot of burdens faced by local families, including financial hardships, involuntary moves, and the impacts of housing displacement on commute times, housing security, and children's schooling, said McKay. Among the highlights, 46% of those surveyed said they experienced difficulties paying rent or mortgage in the last 5 years, and half of those said they had to forego buying food or other essential medicines in order to make their housing payment. About 60% of those surveyed said they had difficulty finding housing, and 95% said the difficulty was affordability. More than 60% of renters and half of the homeowners surveyed experienced housing cost burden, which means they spend more than 30% of household income on housing. And there's more. The panelists on tonight's panel at the Civic Auditorium starting at 7, going to 9, include Diana Alfaro, Project Manager for Mid-Peninsula Housing Corporation in Watsonville, Miriam Greenberg, Professor of Sociology and Director of the Critical Sustainabilities Project, Jack Jacobson, local landlord and attorney, Nicole Montojo, a housing research analyst with UC Berkeley Haas Institute for a Fair and Inclusive Society, and Cheryl Williams, Senior Clerk to the Santa Cruz County Assessment Appeals Board. And there's more in this story. You can check it out online if you happen to have access to it. It's, again, happening at the Civic at 7. I don't know the people on the panel. I think I met Jack Jacobson at one point. I'm glad to hear they're talking about rent control and just eviction protection, since it looks like that one is fighting a serious uphill battle, not to mention that's for Proposition M, the rent control and just eviction proposition, which everyone should go vote for. And also Proposition 10 at the state level, which is to overturn the Costa-Hawkins restrictions that stop cities from really effective rent control. Both of those need to be passed, and both of them are, at the current moment in polls, not doing too well. Finally, tomorrow night, Friday night, there's a thing called the Rise Up and Sing Again Concert Benefit. It starts at 7 o'clock, goes to 9 o'clock, and what more do I have for you? It's also at the 612 Ocean Street Resource Center for Nonviolence. You can rise up and sing again. It benefits the Resource Center, and it's got some local singers, Eileen Vance, Bob Reed, Judy Jagger, along with bassist, vocalist Mary Witt. Never heard of him, but then again, what do I know about musicians? Very little. Sing out to build hope, community, and resilience in these challenging times. Tickets are $20, $5 for students, kids free, but no one turned away for lack of funds. Sponsored by the Resource Center, Santa Cruz Peace Chorale, Community Music School, Gourd Music, and Musical Me Music Together. And that's, again, 7 o'clock tomorrow night, Friday at the Resource Center. Rise up and rise again. So now I'm going to try to reach Brent Adams and see if I can get through to him. And that's sometimes a challenge, but I've been pretty lucky in the last few phone calls to see if we can get a hold of him. He runs the warming center when it's open, which it's not at the moment, and also does the day and night storage program. But I spoke to him last night, I believe. Hey, Brent, it's Robert. I'm calling you from Free Radio, kind of live, although we're taped. You got a minute or two?
Yes.
Hey, Brent, so we spoke yesterday, and we've been, you know, covering a lot of subjects in the past few conversations. There have been some new developments, as you know, the fencing off of the San Lorenzo camp, and our camp, I should say, the park, and then also the closing of the River Street campground, which you've had some both critical and not entirely critical things to say, depending on what you're looking at there. Or at least I have. Maybe you haven't. What's up?
Well, quite definitely, as somebody who casts themselves as an expert on West Coast sanctuary-type camps from San Diego to Seattle, out to Marysville, I know what's possible. And I've been critical about the design and costs of this one, and also the way the city had refused to interact with us at all regarding a sanctuary-type camp vision and what's possible in Santa Cruz, and just went blundering into this profoundly expensive, it hasn't served nearly as many people. When we look at the Warming Center nonprofit, the programs that we operate, and what we want to challenge the community in the future is every single dollar spent should be able to somehow serve every single person that comes in the door without a population cap.
So gotcha.
Different design concepts, totally. Like the storage program has a budget, but we don't have a population cap. It's scalable to as many people as needed.
Brent, what's your reaction to the closing of the campground? Is it celebration? Is it a mixed feeling?
It's all the way along. Every single step we've been told had our expectations raised, and then they diminished them. Meaning, they tell us about these grandiose three-phase plans leading all the way towards a navigation center, that they're going to have this encampment and they're going to close it quite soon for an interim shelter. They keep extending the date with no interim shelter, all the while claiming it's and their big thing is, if you've seen the city manager's recent email blast this morning, he has a little blog.
Tell us about
saying it. Exclusively that the reason the camp is closing, the reason they didn't get any interim shelter started is because of community pushback, neighborhood pushback, which still to my mind is ludicrous. It just shows how raw, how lacking savvy, or what a terrible excuse that is, because the city should and can be able to do whatever they want. Obviously, they can close a park at will. They can do all kinds of things at will, but when it comes to establishing something on their own budget and their own property to help homeless people, they use that as an excuse. And I think, you know, the three-phase plan, extending the camp, on and on. Every other month we're hearing a different thing. And then they don't fulfill their commitment. It's always a reduction from what they had stated they were going to be doing.
Well, you pointed out, I think, several months ago, as did I, that the whole business of winter shelter, although their winter shelter programs generally are one step up from token programs, but there wasn't even a winter shelter program at all. And until perhaps maybe this latest shutdown of the campground is a way of creating another token winter shelter thing out on 7th Avenue. What's your sense of that?
We have no indication that they'll be doing anything on... So it seems that... So they weren't going to do any winter shelter. They extended the encampment till April. I was a little wild in the streets, literally screaming across the intersection at, City Manager Martin Bernal, and being warned even by Susie O'Hara that my comments were getting out of control and it may be affecting my ability to do other work. But I was just under I couldn't believe that they were going to defund the winter shelter and never actually clearly state that that's what they were doing.
This interchange was about about a month ago, something like
August.
That?
August.
Gotcha.
Council meeting, unanimous vote by including Crone and Sandy Brown without anybody uttering the words winter shelter. That's why it freaked me out, because as the director of the warming center, I've got to provide backup to the winter shelter. There's no winter shelter. All of a sudden, I'm lost in this, you know, sea of expectation of taking on the entirety of the burden, because, again, we're scalable to meet the need. If the need is 200 people, then, and I don't have a budget increase, I'm in trouble but what we've done in the meantime, not to talk too much about something you're not asking about, but to we've doubled down to meet that need. We're going to open redundant locations. We're going to try to be ready to open more, twice as many nights as we normally do, and open a backup location, potentially two locations at one time.
Well, Brent, I thought I heard at the same meeting where they didn't even mention winter shelter that they mentioned the sum of $30 million coming their way in housing funding, at least to the city and county.
Yeah, that's the real story here. I'm using the analogy of the tide going out before a tidal wave. You know, or at low tide, the water draws really far out, and it, you know, it seems like that you can see much of the waterline, and that happens before a huge swell, and that's what's happening now. The city knows that it's about to get many millions of dollars to, as planned, to finally, and the county also, to create a navigation center, which is going to cost many millions of dollars, especially the way the city has been spending the money. It's just going to be out of rampant spending. But it's called HEAP funding. It's from Jerry Brown, but it's going through the HAP, through the Continuum of Care, if you know anything about that. It's the way federal money is spent. That's why it's an apples and oranges, very bizarre thing, because the federal dollars are coming through the HAP, are supposed to be focusing towards permanent supported housing. So Jerry Brown's intention is that this is a homeless emergency spending for the cities that have declared homeless shelter emergency, and they've only done that in order to comply with Jerry Brown's wishes.
And Santa Cruz has done that, right?
Yeah, so the city is about, the city and county are about to get somewhere about $30 million, and that's kind of a complicated process. We're in some of those meetings. As a nonprofit director, of course, I'm trying to see a way that we might be able to share in some of that. But the reason we're talking about it here is the money's not going to show up for a while. I just had a conversation on the street yesterday with Rainey Marr, the homeless. I don't know what her title is.
She's a county official.
County level. Meets with the CAO, Carlos Palacios, I'm sorry, and she's the big dog around homelessness and county spending, and she says, what did she say? Why can't they spend money now to, go towards an interim shelter as promised, and then noting that a huge amount of money is coming very soon? Why not just, go to the general fund? We know that they can find money when they need to. And, she's always just saying, that it doesn't work like that and they can't. So what they're all doing is I'm in a meeting very soon, the 24th, with the Association of Faith Community Salvation Army, the city, the county, Warming Center, of course, is what I'm representing, to talk about winter shelter crisis and what we might do collectively. Warming Center already, of course, is gearing up and readying for this crisis. We've made some headway in terms of our interactions with Association of Faith Communities and also Salvation Army. So we'll see what the county can help us. Ideally, the county will be helping us with a little bit of funding. The city will see its way. I'm writing a core investments grant for them. We didn't get it in the past. That's how we get our little piece of money for Warming Center in Watsonville, which is this core investments grant.
Let me go back to the
director. I spent a fair amount of time writing grants.
I know. Let me go back to this closing of the campground, because it's, you pointed out how expensive it is and how, it does not serve, obviously, none of these programs serve the greater community, with the exception of some of your programs, which really makes the attempt to do that. But the question is, given this closing of the campground, does it have any significance for people who want to raise pressure to actually, let's say, facilitate the kind of solutions that you're hoping for in terms of real sanctuary villages, real services to homeless people that are not simply, fig leaves or plums for middle class workers? What's your sense about what's the significance?
We're always waiting for the time when we as a nonprofit and the programs we've operated so successfully in, we operate well-designed, easy-to-operate programs that can show a lot of bang for the buck. And we're always waiting for this opportunity when we can share with the community this vision around a city or a county-certified nonprofit-operated transitional encampment. In the veins of what we've seen in Seattle and or Eugene, there were subtle differences. In Santa Cruz, it would be a hybrid of the two, nothing like this encampment that we saw here. So we're always just kind of waiting for that moment, likely with the county, and the county working through this with the city, likely in Watsonville. So what we see here is this extreme version of a camp gone wrong, mainly because of the way it's designed, three layers of security, not in a fairly good spot, but just handled in, so poorly. Now with this money coming in, it's time for us again to start the conversation. But we feel that the city and the county already are going. They really want to do this navigation center. So far, nobody in this county has defined at all what navigation center means. Is that in the vein of what they've done in San Francisco? Because that's a very specific animal. You have to really understand what navigation center means. And we will not be doing the type of navigation center they have in San Francisco. We don't have, if you can't get an interim shelter in a neighborhood here, you will definitely not be able to get a navigation center, because that's a full-fledged homeless, mega program.
Well, as I understand it,
similar to the ones that you see in West Oakland, that maybe a little bit more. It's between, if you talk about the new encampment in West Oakland, what they've done is they've taken something like the River Street Camp mixed with something like a homeless shelter, and then poof, you've got something interesting to talk about there. That's what, you know, there are so many different ways to strike these balances, you know, but we don't seem to be open to conversation here. Where are these conversations happening?
Well, let me ask you, Brent, I mean, the business about, while you and I are talking, and perhaps you and others are talking who have the money, although they don't seem to be too happy to talk to people who are, you know, actually doing things. You know, people are outside freezing and having the usual problems with the police, which have increased their actions around trespass, closed area, and similar things. Some people are rather pissed about that and want to do something about it, particularly, including perhaps those who are in this River Street campground, some of whom are going to be, I don't know, ferried over to the new, given priority for a week. For a while, you know, and of course that's a different program. That's, you know, you get wanded and searched when you go in. You can't leave your stuff there during the day. Of course, you have a program which allows for that to happen, and good for you.
But let's just say for the negative things, a winter shelter is appropriate for some uses, and the way that the city county does it does have it, you know, operating strangely, like a bag search and a.
That's not really my, Brent. That's not really my point. My point is that this is a point which people are angered at the situation, and you know that's a point at which in the past there have been protest movements of different kinds. Years ago, you were involved in those protest movements, and you've come to the conclusion, I think, that in Santa Cruz some of them have not been productive, and that simply serve the egos of, you know, the people who are doing the protesting, and that. I haven't been what?
Well organized in a way that I think they should be organized.
Oh, I don't claim to be the organizer. Yeah.
Given more citations to the people they're trying to help, and the Freedom Sleepers, no accounting of those citations.
You know, in any program I've ever organized, Brent, I've always told the participants, we don't take any responsibility for the citations. Now, that's not what the Freedom Sleepers did, and I wasn't really, I don't think, a key organizer, but I was a participant for sure. But, you know, generally speaking, I tell people who are homeless who want to do this, the only thing you're going to get is probably a bunch of tickets, and then, of course, maybe some changes, but maybe not, or maybe some kind of limited community with a lot of people drunk and using drugs, and, you know, it's not going to be the most, but it is a protest, and that's what I'm usually pretty open about that when that happens.
What happens is people gather, there's a promise that we're doing something together, there's food, there's community, these are things that people really crave who sleep outside, there's power in doing something, they lay down, and then they get woken up at 1 in the morning with a citation.
But they know that's going to happen. They know that's going to happen.
But what we've seen at numerous times is that the activists go home, the activists aren't there. At Freedom Sleepers, there were token citations given to some of the activists. Abby and Keith did sleep there on Tuesday nights, but for the most part, as someone who documented it on the nightly, there was nobody there, mostly there, most of the time when... And that's my critique. You can disagree, but that's what I've seen.
Yeah, no. I was simply expressing my own experience and what I do.
I think you're gearing up to make a point.
Well, I mean, the point is that there's a meeting at 5 o'clock on Saturday. I guess Keith McHenry is calling it. You may have seen the flyer. I don't know if it's gotten out yet. Which discusses these things and asks people what do they want to do, because while it's very well to talk about, and perhaps appropriate to talk about, how can the money be better spent, how can the community be involved, all these issues that you raise, the fact remains every night people are sleeping, and I think we've discussed this before, in different places, some of them safe, some of them unsafe, but there's a problem situation now that, you know, some people at least want to take some action on. And I guess my question to you is, what advice do you have for those folks? If you were at that 5 o'clock meeting, would you just say go home and wait for the warming center to meet with city officials?
I have lots of things to say about this. They're multi-layered. When you say action, I don't actually – I call bullshit on that, because they don't do action to actually build things that are long-standing. Action – is not what they do. It's a protest activist community that we find, what do you want to protest this week? And that's what we've seen over the last
since Occupy and long before with HUP, but mainly with Occupy, moving towards things like the Freedom Sleepers Camp. Rather than saying, this is our population of people, we care about them, how do we best serve them and make their lives better, we always use it as a we use the homelessness as a bludgeon to shame the city, and then we set up this camp or that camp. They're not action-oriented. Action means how do we do things that are...
So would you tell them all to go...
Let me finish my thought. Over hundreds of people that have this long-lasting effect. Which really, that's
the reason I interrupt you, Brent.
The Warming Center exists specifically in answer to that. We have something that stands the test of time and helps people.
Wait a minute. Slow down.
These people have not been involved in the least bit in.
Brent, you've said all this before.
Talk about storage.
You've said all this before,
talk about
Brent.
The real needs of people who sleep outside.
Brent, you've said all this before. My question to you is,
Robert,
rather than this. What would you say to these folks? Would you just simply criticize
it? So for my uses in the war and trying to achieve what we do, we've talked about the effectiveness of programs in Eugene. What we would like to do is have conversation with and have a holistic meeting with protest activists.
So wait a minute. Let me interrupt you. You're suggesting. Wait a minute. No. I got to maintain control of the conversation to some extent.
Right.
And that is, so you're saying, all right, listen. Arrange a meeting several weeks down the road with people from Eugene, people from the city, the Warming Center, and go home. Don't do any of this protesting stuff, but, wait for this large meeting. I'm trying to say, if you were there at 5 o'clock and you were going to propose them to do something else other than set up an encampment, what would you suggest they do?
I would say, what's achievable? What do we want to... So what are the actual... achievable effects that you want to come out of this pressure that you're going to put on, like I'm saying, in Eugene they had this group that's camped out on the city.
All right. Well, suppose they say, okay, they say they want to have say. All right. Yes. Suppose you say that you want to have a camp. Their effect is they want to have a campground opened up, at least as a sort of an emergency overflow, similar to the San Lorenzo campground, which of course is now a closed-off area. What would you say to that response? Would you say that's no, that's not good? We should instead.
What this action shows is a lack of savvy into what the actual conversations are right now. What's actually achievable? We do want to get is we want to get moved towards the space where the city and the county are ready to create a certification process for nonprofits to operate sanctuary-type camps.
That's okay. So in other words,
what they're talking about right now with this receding.
I understand the theory, Brent. My question is, you're at this meeting. People can you can say you want to say go home and wait a few months to get this together.
All we want right now is. We're not trying to establish a camp at Poganip or this or that in a way that we already know that these activists are not able to operate in such a creature. What we need is that if the city is closing the encampment and they're only opening, closing 60 beds at the camp and only opening 60 beds at the winter shelter, we end up with a net of zero.
Right, I understand that. I understand that.
So that's what we're talking about. What we need to do is the activists have to say, then you can't be closing parks. You have to actually create a bigger understanding. And,
how do you do that?
I'm sorry. The chief has got a lot of play from saying he's not enforcing the camping ban.
How do you do that? How do you get this? You're at the 5 o'clock meeting, and one person. Wait a minute. One person says to you, Brent, how about if you run the camp? Would you be up for it to have a camp run? Let's suppose.
There's no camp. It
can't be done immediately. You're saying
go way ahead of time, have the space, have the community meetings so that you get the community of the name, like we did with the storage program. Here.
So you say you've got to wait for that to happen or create that before you do anything. So you would say don't do anything at 5 o'clock other than that.
Yeah. I mean, we're not trying to get it. I would encourage them to not try to do a protest camp, but to get the city to relax and help facilitate people camping.
How do you do that?
Instead of fencing them up, that's exactly the opposite. Or instead of having a free-for-all like you did last winter in San Lorenzo camp. You simply put bathrooms out there. You allow you realize that people are going to be in Harvey West to a certain extent, that they're going to be in if you don't want them downtown, where are people going to be sleeping out in the winter? It's the most harsh time of all to be doing this to your community. We've allowed people to camp in various areas. We know that they're camping along the highway, along Cole Street, along the tracks, in limited areas along the levee, along Cowles, and on and on and on it goes. So we call it displacement management, where you have a big map and you gray out.
You're not really answering my question.
People, and we talk about how do we as a city facilitate the dignified and respectful camping
Are you saying, Brent, you don't have the answer to that, that this has to be arrived at through a lengthy discussion?
No. What I would say is let the protesters do what they're going to do, but let the protesters know what's out there that the city is willing to move towards. You can't get the city to agree to something that's not on the table.
So are you prepared to put that on the table as a proposal that, let's say, the protesters can say, look, we're going to be doing our protesting, but we also want you to consider this because we think it is, you know, helpful? Are you afraid that you'll be...
I can't, as a director of a warming center, even go to this meeting.
No, I don't mean whether you'd be at the meeting. It was a proposal, not you. You know, it can be John Doe that gives the proposal, although who knows, people may know where it's coming from. But, I mean, the issue is if the proposal has merit, you see, and this has always been the problem as I view your situation. You are hamstrung, and you've realized this, by your need to get funding and credibility and acceptability by authorities. But
we are operating two highly functioning programs in the city already.
Very true.
Yeah.
But now, regarding this immediate situation, this immediate situation, so would you be interested in presenting or having presented through some third party things that you think that the protesters should be suggesting be done, whether they're protesting or not?
So short of having a different type of meeting where we put on the big board all the programs that exist in Seattle, Portland, Eugene, and then the various protest-type camps, and we have a thoughtful conversation about that is not, you know, that can authentically survey what's achievable with those, what's been done. And you've said many times when we look at Dignity Village it was out of the doorways camp that became the
in Portland, yeah,
grounding of the Dignity Village, which is kind of the state of the art. Unfortunately, it's really dog-eared, and that's many years, you know, past now. But what I would say at the meeting you're talking about is a meeting that I don't really have much interest in, because it is just, we've got to do something now, we're going to take over, we're going to do this or that, and it's not that. I would just say do it, because, I mean, crazy as it may sound, everything that group does out in public benefits our work, because, you know, I just need it. I can't be out there applying pressure to the city.
I agree with you.
Is don't lead our people into a police line to get citations ever again in the way that we saw with Freedom Sleepers. And it also happened, you know, a little bit better at Peace Camp 2010 and at other spaces that we've seen, Occupy Santa Cruz. The thing is, if you're really going to do that, take it on more responsibly. Actually have an organization that the city can interact with that's not Abby Samuels yelling. It has to be a community effort, and the community actually has to see it as not these same old protesters doing the same old thing again, which it looks like it is. If you have Keith McHenry out in front and then Robert Norse is tagging along beside with a microphone, and you've got Flach and Posner all up in the mix, no one's going to give it any credibility, and it's sunk before it even gets started. Now, I love every one of you independently as people, but as an activist action group, it already has this tinge of, we know best, get out of our way, we're going to take this space, we're going to put the homeless people out there and serve them food, and we know that where we're going is going to get citations, but more authentically, if I was in this meeting, how would we do it differently in a way that would again, our biggest challenge is not to make this thing happen. Our biggest challenge is how do we tell a story that gets the community behind us? And we're telling a vision that the community resonates with. We've shown over and over since Occupy Santa Cruz that our vision doesn't resonate with the community at large, not even with lefties and very few progressives. There are the ones who are always there with us, and they'll show up, and we love them. But we're really, you know, and then we get, you know, through Food Not Bombs, you'll get some college students through, you'll get some of their volunteer, but we're not telling a real story that's resonating. And what I've dubbed, I've kind of gone to the other end of the field and tried to tell a story that
I understand.
Says, yeah, we're, I mean, here are the
needs. So, Brent, I'm going to have to interrupt.
Needs, and here's a specific way to meet these specific needs.
So, Brent,
the organized, official, you know, legal way through an
office. I got to call time on this.
All right.
You put a lot of, you know, out there on the table, and it'll be heard, uncensored. And so, is there anything else you want to add that's independent of anything we've been discussing?
No, I mean, what's true is, you know, I'm a divisive voice. I realize that in a community that wants to, once in a while, do action. And I wish we could have a bigger tent, but sometimes, you know, if this person's in the tent, you know, you and I are talking right now. You and I consider ourselves in league with each other, but there are other voices that refuse, like if I'm in the room at all, to even be in the room. And that's just, I just find that's an ego problem. That's but let's just say storage program is opening 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours at night at 150 Felker Street, Suite H. You can get us on warmingcenter@program.com, warmingcenter@gmail. The hotline is 234-9848. Have a great day.
Brent, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that, of course, was Brent Adams. Now it's time for a little musical relief. Just gotten a phone call from a former council member, transportation activist, and community member, Micah Posner. Hey, Micah.
Hi, Robert.
And you were you actually emailed me earlier about your concern, one might even say anger and disgust. I guess disgust was the word you used recently, about what you saw when you walked through San Lorenzo Park recently, or drove through it, or biked past it.
Yeah, it seems that concurrently to dramatically reducing the amount of legal places we leave for homeless people, they've fenced off most of San Lorenzo Park and most of Grant Street Park in an attempt to make sure that people without homes don't have recourse to a legal place to sleep, which I find to be disgusting, to be honest, and contrary to the Constitution, which was recently explained by the Western Circuit Court as prohibiting the jurisdiction from stopping people from sleeping, calling it cruel and unusual punishment.
And this is something you've always been concerned about, even while you were on city council and at in the significant minority. You and I have had our differences of opinion on that. But you also mentioned that the city and the county seem to be collaborating in this effort.
Well, I think, you know, just reading the newspaper, it looks like the city and the county task force jointly decided to close the camp. And I know that the county doesn't like homeless people sleeping in the bench land. So it seemed like there was a moment there where the city was letting people sleep in the bench lands as part of a shift in policy where, you know, they were sort of moving in the right direction, moving in terms of treating people like humans, at least incrementally. And the county always didn't like it, so I'm surmising that now the city and the county have made a deal to, I don't know what, like, hope they poof, magically go away again or something. But I surmise they're in it together because of the joint task force.
Have you had any conversations with city officials such as Parks and Rec officials? I know there's a new head of Parks and Rec, or at least one coming in, Tony Elliott, I think his name is, although Carol Skurich is the interim director, that have given you more information about this that you can pass on to us.
Well, I talked to Carol, and she said that the park would be closed indefinitely due to, quote, maintenance and, quote, safety issues. And I can't say she told me this directly, but my impression from what she said is that they intend to close the camp past the date of the closure of the River Street campground.
You mean to close the park past that
the park, well, the campground, the park.
Yeah, it used to be a campground. Yeah, I know that they've also apparently closed the bathrooms at San Lorenzo. Is that, was that your impression?
I didn't look. I was too busy being angry about the fences.
Yeah, that's what I heard from, I guess it was Keith McHenry, who was there taking some photos and has posted some photos on his Facebook page for those who want to take a look. You said also, and don't let me misquote you on this, Micah, that if there is a protest campout, and we're talking about discussing this at 5 o'clock on Saturday at the Food Not Bombs meal at the corner of Ocean and Water Streets, not Ocean and Water Streets, Water and Pacific, that's where the Food Not Bombs meal is, that you have an interest in being a part of that.
I have a strong interest in being part of that.
And this is, I know that at one night, I believe, you slept at the Freedom Sleepers. That was some time ago.
With my daughter, three generations.
And you brought your, you dragged your children into it, as I recall, yes.
No, I didn't drag them into it. They're well aware of their grandpa's ethics and the history of the civil rights movement in the United States. And my 12-year-old and her friend came. I think if we do it again, I'll try to get more kids to come. I think most people in Santa Cruz sort of vaguely agree that sleeping is a human right, and it's just, we just have to do things to sort of spur that interest and get them involved, which in this case might mean sleeping.
And you were suggesting that this could best be done, or might best be done, at the date of the campground closing, which I understand is now, somebody mentioned this to me, who was it, not sure who, moved back to the middle of November. Is that accurate?
I don't know. I've been trying to get in touch with them. I thought it was early November, but...
Yeah, I'd heard that too initially, and then I heard it had been moved, but I don't have reliable information on that, so I can't say. But you think it should be done, this protest should begin at the point at which the campground, the River Street campground, closes, right?
Yeah, I think we should showcase for people that not the city is not even incrementally going forward. It's going backwards. It's providing less services to the people, not services. It's further criminalizing the people that don't have homes, not making it better for them.
Do you have any sense of, have you talked to any other people about this? Do they share your views? Are they less, you know, upset about it? Are they more upset about it? Have you not yet gotten into much discussion? It is pretty new, this latest fencing off.
I just hit the schoolyard, so I'll talk to some great parents and see what they think about.
All right, well, listen, get back to me.
The Constitution.
I'd like to hear more. And if anybody wants to call in and give an opinion, I'm actually doing my show now for broadcast at 6. So have them call me. The number is 423. Well, you know what it is. You've got it. 423-4833. So.
Thanks, Robert. And I'm sorry that you've often been correct about your disgust.
Me too. Me too.
Take care. Bye.
All right. You take care, man. And that, of course, was Micah Posner, council member at one time, who is now simply a mere community member. Let's take a musical break.
Away out in the suburbs of SoCal, among the gentle hills of Chaparral, there sits a little rest home where they grow a certain shrub. It's the Orange County Rolling Acres Senior Center Cannabis Club. Exactly at 4:20 every day, the nurses put the bingo cards away. And soon the place is smokier than any Soho pub. It's the Orange County Rolling Acres Senior Center Cannabis Club. Ah, yes, they were in chronic pain until they grew that chronic on the windowsill. Now they read me chokeless while they're toking in the tub at the Orange County Rolling Acres Senior Center Cannabis Club. They're convalescing, yes indeed, plucking every flower, removing every stem and seed. They're reminiscing this and that. They may not know where they are, but friends, they all know where it's at. Nurse, bring the nacho cheese Doritos stat. And just last week, they all got hauled to jail and had to throw a bake sale to make bail. The cops came back for seconds. This is what I call good grub. At the Orange County Rolling Acres Senior Center Cannabis Club. It hasn't changed their politics one bit. They'll take a hit and say that LBJ is full of it. But this assisted living life of crime has got them laughing at Bugs Bunny for the 37th time. And subverting the dominant paradigm. So pass the Metamucil and the bun. Let's hear some Patty Page or Cheech and Chong. And one more time with feeling, what's all the hubbub, bub? At the Orange County Rolling Acres Senior Center Cannabis Club. So stay in school, kids. Look alive. And don't do drugs until you're over 85.
And that was the Orange County Rolling Acres Senior Center Cannabis Club from the Real American album by Roy Zimmerman. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, or you're listening on an archived file on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website. And thank you for doing so. Hope you're enjoying it. So now let's give a try to Food Not Bombs activist Keith McHenry, who, as I mentioned before, he has put out a flyer. I don't know if I'm not sure if he's distributed it yet because it's a little unclear, concerning a meeting on Saturday at 5 o'clock at the Food Not Bombs meal in the twilight hours before dark. It's actually before the sun sets, actually, at 5 o'clock on the, guess it's, 19th, around the issue of what to do, if anything, around the situation with the closing of the campground and the continued criminalization of homeless people in Santa Cruz at night. And you heard Micah Posner, you heard Brent Adams, different points of view, perhaps, or maybe not. I think there's a general broad concern here. Let's see if we can get Keith on the line. So I'm ringing now. Let's see if we can get a hold of him. Well, we have a ringtone, and maybe we'll get an answer. You never can tell, but maybe not.
Hey, Keith, over in this end.
Hey, Keith, this is Robert, and you're on Free Radio right now, or at least you will be in.
Okay.
You're being recorded for Free Radio. I just spoke with Micah Posner and Brent Adams, getting different perspectives on, I guess you talked about a meeting at 5 o'clock on Saturday around, criminalization of the homeless, fencing at San Lorenzo, the closing of the River Street campground, and who knows what else. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I can tell you that I went over to San Lorenzo Park and I observed the fence completely around the entire park, with the exception of the bike paths and the path over the pedestrian bridge over the river, and a little bit of the duck pond you could get walk around it. But and then there was the only other part that was, you could get into the children's playground if you have a child, and then there was also, but you had to, and so that was one little access point somehow that you could get in there. And then you could also, there was an area of grass by the county building that where a first respond, whatever it's called, yeah. It's called first.
Not sure, but I guess, when did you get over to the park?
That was yesterday at about 6 o'clock.
Yes, I remember we spoke about that. And you... Go ahead.
The first alarm, anyway. Yeah, he was telling people that they weren't allowed to be there, and several groups of homeless people were telling me that they were told by him that they had to go across the river, that they weren't allowed to be on that side of the river.
And this is not just not in the enclosed off areas, but they couldn't be on the lanes, the pathways.
They were not allowed to be on that side of the river. There's no way you could get into the areas which were fenced in.
Because these aren't just, we're not talking about meshing. We're talking about kind of a steel or, metal fences, right?
Correct, yeah.
Now, as I understand it then, because there's the signs talked about maintenance and safety?
Yeah, it said safety and maintenance, correct. That was the, what it was claiming was the issue. It says focused maintenance, public safety. It said park closed until further notice for focused maintenance, public safety.
Now, of course, I think there's already been a couple of folks who've said, well, this is just, this is maintenance and this is not directed against homeless people. It excludes the entire public. Why are you expressing such alarm at this, McHenry?
Okay, well, the first alarm was telling homeless people that they had to leave the area. Is why would they have to leave the area? They weren't in an area that was being, altered.
Blocking the pathway, perhaps? Obstructing the sidewalk?
They weren't blocking the pathway. There were plenty of, the area, they were in the, Enrique was actually in a grassy area on county property.
It was not fenced up.
Yeah, there was no, fence there or anything like that. He was just told to leave the area. Now, the other people nobody was blocking anything. They were just told they had to go over the river. So that's one thing. And, that's one of that's what I heard there.
Have you had any further communications with any officials or shitty council members, as I like to call them?
Yeah, I've talked to both Chris and Sandy, and they both are concerned about this and believe that the official story is not exactly accurate.
What is the official story?
Not telling the whole story. And they feel like they're being stonewalled, and they think it is got a lot to do with homeless issues. And Sandy particularly thought that there should be some organized resistance to this. And Chris and suggested also that might be an important avenue to go. And he was feeling that, and both of them were feeling that they were not on the inside track as to what was going on. And a lot more of it was going on than met the eye. And one of the things both mentioned is that the coincidence, either the city government is very inept and doesn't know what it's doing, staff is really lame, Susie O'Hara and them don't know what they're up to, or this is basically the idea of harassing the homeless, because it was suggested by them that it would have made sense to have closed off the park earlier, after the very last event, and keep the camp, the Riverside campground, open until, and then when the Riverside campground closed, not have this fence around San Lorenzo Park. So they find it somewhat suspicious that there was Salvation Army shelter wasn't opened. They were told by the city manager that the faith-based community didn't want to open a shelter this year, that there was too much for them. He doesn't believe that necessarily true. That there was actually an issue where the Riverside campground was intentionally made overpriced and overly regulated so that it would then be set to be
failure and therefore would never happen again.
Well, now, what about this $30 million, Keith, that is coming our way, or coming the city's way, not our way at all, that this was something that Brent and I discussed, and that I think I talked to Micah Posner, who said, by the way, he's interested in, with his children and anybody he can round up, joining a sleep out, although he suggests it start at when the campground, the River Street campground, closes. I guess a couple questions. One is, do you have any sense, you probably don't, because you're not into those issues necessarily so much, maybe you are, about this financial, there's a huge amount of money coming into the city. Even though it costs $90,000 a month, they had already claimed Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl, who are the sort of point women on the issue of the campground, that the campground would go until April. Now suddenly it's being closed down within the month. In spite of all this money coming in, what do you make of that?
I think that it's interesting because in the article in the Sentinel by Jessica York, and I don't see it here actually in the email from Martine, they do talk about this money. The staff at Homeless Services Center was talking about how great it was they were getting money to supplement the other money so they could add something like possibly more. It was actually access to showers.
How about access to meals, which they shut down 2 years ago, which prompted the arrival of the Freedom Sleepers?
That doesn't make any sense to actually provide food. Let me see, what was the quote on that one?
Well, let me get back to the issue of what your thoughts are about what's going to be happening on Saturday. Are you putting out this flyer? I understand there's several meetings tonight.
I was actually right this second trying to figure out what it was I was doing because I just got off the phone.
I see.
So it's a matter, and I have to do it within 5 minutes or I don't get to do it.
Well, I better get off the phone so you can make that decision.
That's one of my problems.
Oh, well, listen, why don't you go ahead and...
I have to put the thing out, run over there, run right back, and then give it to people because I've got a class at 5 o'clock.
Well, why not let you go and finish up that flyer if you're going to do it, or let us know. I mean, is there still a meeting at 5 o'clock on Saturday as far as you're concerned?
I mean, if I send out this flyer now to get printed to hand out at the homeless thing tonight, then I guess there is. If there's not, then there isn't. I don't know. I was going to print that. I don't know. I'm into doing it.
Well, if you announce it, I will pass. I mean, I've already been kind of announcing it on the air, but, you know, I can try to correct that if it's not happening.
I'll put out the, I'm going to print 50 for tonight. Are you going to print any?
I'll print some. I'll print it.
I just sent it, and the most recent one has a lot better, I changed it a lot.
Okay, I'll check it out. And
don't do an old one. You know, do the most recent one.
Will do.
And
I will let you get back to what you're doing.
Okay, take care.
You too, man. And that, of course, was Keith McHenry, Food Not Bombs. Check out his meals, 4 to 6. I should say the meals of Food Not Bombs. Vegan and... reportedly very tasty. I kind of wander around interviewing as my excuse for not eating, or maybe sometimes I think I may have even nibbled a little. And it looks like Keith's latest flyer did reach me in the email. It reads as follows: more fences, less winter shelter, more cruelty to the poor, action planning meeting, why are the homeless being told to leave the parks? 5 p.m. on the steps of the downtown post office, Saturday, October 20th. So it's not the 19th, it's the 20th. My apologies there. That's Saturday, 5 o'clock, that the meeting is going to be happening. So check it out. So on another subject briefly, here's some correspondence from Andy Carcello. You remember Andy is a medical marijuana user who has been having some rage and some concerns about the behavior and profiteering, as he sees it, of marijuana distribution centers now that recreational marijuana has been, to some extent, legalized, and medical marijuana protections have been gutted under the initiative that was passed a couple years ago. Here's what Andy writes to Supervisor John Leopold. Just to let you know, I have been, or should I say, was a member of WAM, Women and Men for Medical Marijuana, for 10 years before legalization, quote-unquote, ruined compassion care distributions. I, as well as my friends, some dying of cancer, have been hurt by the obvious profiteering of the dispensaries. I purchased 3.5 grams of marijuana from Kinder Peoples for $30. It's all priced the same because of price fixing by the dispensaries, and I pay $7 in taxes. Frankly, I seem to be the victim of excessive taxation and not the dispensaries themselves. Disabled people on disability or poor, the minimal discount provided by Santa Cruz politicians and perpetrated by the dispensaries are a cruel farce. How could this happen in my hometown? Sickens me. You are on the face of the bottle, Andy Carcello. And John Leopold responded, Supervisor Leopold. Andy, thanks for reaching out to me. I understand our concerns and share your concerns and share many of them. I have pushed the board to lower the taxation rate, but I've been unsuccessful. Our board has supported legislation that was passed by the legislature, but vetoed by the governor, that would have allowed legal free distribution of cannabis for medical care. We will try again in the next session in the hopes that we can be successful with the next governor. I will continue to bring your voice into our policy discussion at the board. Of course, there's no mention by Leopold here of the provision regarding medical marijuana that dispensaries have specific provisions for low-income and no-income folks, which I believe I was asking that question around 2009, 2010, and got the, oh, it's illegal right now, it's all on hold, we don't know what to do, yada, 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 no answers for you at the moment. And I don't have actually a very specific memory of the particular response, but I think it was generally one that did not meet the concern that I had, that there was some provision currently in the law that you didn't have to lower the tax rate or get a legislation passed through Sacramento to lower the tax rate, but that rather there was requirements that were currently in the law regarding medical marijuana. Now, perhaps those requirements have been removed, and I've suggested to Andy that he get into that and find out more about it. If I mention it, if I speak to him, I will try to mention it to him and see if he can learn something more. So I'm going to throw in now a few bits and pieces from earlier audio files that I've recorded but haven't had a chance to play, kind of a variety of things. This is from the first September council meeting, the oral communications period, where Marilyn Garrett speaks about the issue of cell towers. Now, this is something that is kind of controversial in some quarters. Do cell phones and cell towers and microwave radio waves impact human health? She believes it does. She's very concerned about it. She speaks about it regularly with a quavering voice. She's getting older and older. But there are some who share her views. I'm going to let her speak for herself. And actually, this wasn't at City Council. I think I also heard her there. This was right after the San Francisco Mime Troupe did its last performance of the summer in Santa Cruz. As I recall, I got a god-awful audio of it, for which I apologize. But here's Marilyn, who you can actually hear. And so I'm here with
Marilyn Garrett.
And this is after the Mime Troupe has come and not quite gone. And Marilyn, you're distributing a flyer that talks about cell phone placement on public utility poles.
Yes, in the public right-of-way. This is taking place in the city and county. These are emitting microwave radiation, mainly for Verizon 4G, every few houses. The city of Santa Cruz has about 80 planned with Verizon. The city of Santa Cruz did a contract with Crown Castle.
Who is responsible for creating the contract? Our esteemed city manager, Martine Bernal?
Yes, there was a contract that was done with Crown Castle to put these in the public right-of-way.
Before the city council?
the contract was passed, and my understanding is till now.
Were you there to oppose it, Marilyn Garrett?
I missed that one. I'm sorry. It's like paying the city $1,500 per pole. There's a couple up on Nobel Street near the university off of Bay.
How can one identify these? What do they look like?
Well, there's a...
You're showing me a flyer.
There's a picture here. I don't know how to describe
it. How would you describe it? It looks like a water tower on top of a
They're on
big,
utility poles.
Like a telephone
standards.
Pole.
There's usually a cylinder at the top that contains the antennas. There are boxes. If you take a meter detecting radiation, it'll go way up to the top. And
How new is this? This particular cylinder placement?
Well, in the county, I know of three or four years ago for 4G, but there are plans for the 5G technology, and you can find more at whatis5g.info. But it's very intense radiation that burns the skin. It's what the military uses to.
Have you personally experienced this?
I don't think the 5G, but I can definitely feel the 4G.
You could tie yourself to one of these poles after a few days later. We could come and it would be evidence, proof.
Yeah.
Before we could drag your corpse before the city.
This is the sound of the microwave radiation being detected here at San Lorenzo Park.
And how strong is it here compared to elsewhere, let's say?
It's none of it's safe, and downtown is terrible. It'll go way up to the red.
What is the contamination here? If you're using a measurement, how would you describe it?
It's all dangerous.
I know. But I'm asking you a specific question, Marilyn.
It's all dangerous.
Marilyn, what is the measurement here in the park?
Oh, I don't know. It tells you on here
how many. Device. I want to know what.
You can see. What does it say here?
It says, looks like 0.10.
This is volts per meter on this particular one.
You've been downtown. What's the difference downtown? Is it higher?
It'll
lower?
It'll often go up to the red, but they are finding very horrible biological effects at what are considered low levels.
What number is the red here on your electro or your?
What does it say? Is it up to six volts per meter?
It goes up to 6 volts. Which of those is the red?
It'll go up to 6 volts per meter in the red. So this goes green, yellow, orange, red.
And where does it become red?
Where?
I mean, where on this meter does it become red?
At the top up here.
At 6, okay.
Yeah.
And that means, you might
and
as well...
And there are different measures to measure different frequencies, but the biological effects, and these are the effects they find around cell towers, and these are like cell
and
towers.
A flyer that you recommend people can find online where?
Let's see, they're different. What is 5G.info, EMF Safety Network, StopSmartMeters.org is a good source. Your own health and fitness.org has a lot of programs on biological harm. So this should not be, we don't give consent to involuntary, constant microwave radiation toxic trespass.
Chickens very well. Now, come on.
Yes, definitely.
And we've been talking with
Marilyn Garrett. I'm part of Wireless Radiation Alert Network, and you can contact Mike Ferry at the city, who's the planner for what is it?
I'm sure he'll listen very attentively to you before hanging up.
He's the planner for the city. He knows about these, but they're being rubber stamped approval with no.
Do you have a permit for those drums?
No. No consent to the public.
Oh, I love those drums.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Okay, thank you.
And I ran into this next speaker. I ran around the corner from the Women's Health Center as I was dealing with a car problem. She talks about some interesting experiences she's had as a poor person, often on the streets. So it is about 10 to 1 here on September 20th, no, 19th. And I'm talking with
Candace Devlin.
And Candace, or Candy, as you told me originally.
Right.
We're right around the corner from the Women's Health Center.
And you had some comments about life downtown. I guess we ran into each other a couple of decades ago after the earthquake.
Correct.
And what did we talk about then? Do you remember?
Just friendship talk. Hi, being pleasant to each other.
Okay. I didn't hit on you.
No.
Oh, well, you know, I can't win them all. All right. So what's new with you now?
Nothing really. Same stuff.
I know you wanted to talk though. You noticed I showed you my card. It was about homeless civil rights. You said you've been finding frequent violations of your civil rights downtown.
Every day I'm walking around, my civil rights are being violated. 2 years before 12/22/2009, I went to Dientes Community Dental, and they malpracticed me. And when I tried to get a director to resolve the issue because I couldn't eat on both sides of my mouth, I guess it was a fill-in director. I call him imposter director.
What was the nature of the malpractice? You said you couldn't eat on both sides of your mouth. Was it because of, I shouldn't assume, bad dental work?
Right. I thought they were changing my fillings, but still to this day, I really don't even know what they did.
What did they say they did?
I was under the impression they were changing my fillings. And at the age of 50, some of them fillings have been in there for 45 years. So Medi-Cal was paying for it right before Medi-Cal stopped paying. So I thought, okay, this is a good plan, and I went for it. And it turned into a lifetime nightmare.
And that was because you said you could no longer chew?
I couldn't eat on either side of my mouth. I made an appointment with the director who on 12/22/2009 who proceeded to hit me in the mouth. But when he hit me in the mouth, he broke three of my teeth and he did hinge joint damage. And due to the hinge joint damage, you have to reconstruct my teeth. I have been in a dental chair every week for the last 10 years. I have two oral maxillofacial surgeons. I have specialists that says one tooth directly was from a direct blow, and I went through every accident I ever been through, and I purposely left that one out, and he said no. And I went, okay, 12/22/2009, I was directly hit. I'm not entitled to an attorney.
So this is a while. This is about 8-9 years ago. It sounds like you're talking better. Are you able to eat now?
Yeah, a little better.
Your face looks, you know, it doesn't look like it.
Well, I was just in a dental chair 2 days ago.
But you have a lot of constant dental work.
Constant, every week. It's decreasing a little bit because what I did is I joined Lance Armstrong Foundation, and I had to move from my spot, give up my spot in Santa Cruz. I had to move to Napa, which I did. I went to before Lance Armstrong Foundation, and Lance Armstrong Foundation said malpractice and fraud.
Let me move from that because I know that's a serious matter for you, to the more recent stuff that may have happened to you in Santa Cruz, if anything.
Recently, I'm homeless because of this dental issue, and I find that I am repetitively, every single day, being harassed by the sheriff. They run checks on me. They've taken my picture. They want my phone number. I'm being profiled, and I haven't broken the law up until last week. I haven't even had a ticket for years. I just got two tickets. They're infractions, and I'm running around going, what's an infraction? Because that's how long it's been since I've had a ticket.
Tell me about this last ticket you got. Where did you get it, and what happened?
I got one going to the homeless shelter, those three lanes that are right there. I was really upset and anxietied out because it took close to 100 calls to book my rides to San Francisco and then the work. So my dog kind of seized up, my service dog. So I was kind of upset, but it's kind of confusing right there. And I guess I was in the right turn lane, and I went straight to go to the shelter. So he gave me a ticket for that, and it's confusing there, but I think the ticket was just. And then the one prior to that, I was talking to my caseworker because we were trying to get these rides together, 2 weeks of every day, all day, trying to get rides. I think I'm being discriminated by Coast Alliance for being homeless.
Up in San Francisco, you go there for medical purposes?
Right. I ran myself through trauma care.
Okay. And so what was the second ticket for?
The first ticket was for talking on a cell phone. I was talking to my caseworker. I'm overworked. I'm doing the work of eight men, trying to get myself in housing. I'm a senior, a disabled senior with a HUD voucher, and I have a service dog in the car. And yesterday I was telling people I was going to take pictures of my car because this is where your federal and state taxes are going. My car looks like hell. It's dirty. It's filthy. filthy. I have no money to eat. I have no money to do laundry. There's pretty much absolutely no help.
Now, this was, is your car currently your home?
Correct.
And are you properly registered?
Everything. I'm a legal abiding citizen, and I vote too.
And have you been able to park successfully on public property or private property?
To sleep. I have my car fixed so that you can look through the windows. You can barely see that I'm in there. So I'm parking just directly on the streets. I will park on private property if there's no towing signs or any signs whatsoever, and I try to blend in. I don't think you can really see me in there.
Have you been stopped or questioned for parking in Santa Cruz on public property?
No, because I try to avoid that. I don't want to lose my car. But I'm being questioned by the sheriff on a daily basis more than once a day.
So it is the sheriff, and so it's outside the city limits.
Correct. I'm over by the flea market.
And
I come over here to get away from the sheriff and hide.
What's a typical conversation with the sheriff sound like?
The sheriff's partially responsible for me being homeless, too. They vouched up my police report. Driver's license name, run check on me, take my picture, want my phone number, tell me to take good care of my dog. It's a nice dog.
What's your dog's name?
My dog's name, he's got a long name. His name is King Billy Buddy Denton Ren 1010.
Don't expect me to repeat that.
He's earned all those.
So, you're still smiling. That's
something. I always
your teeth
smile.
Look good, by the way. What did you do to them?
They were beautiful before this happened. And now I'm all crowned up.
I got crowns, too.
Now they're still in the gold.
Are you able to chew? Are you able to eat?
Yeah, but I can't eat because social services keeps depriving me of services that I'm entitled to. So right now, currently, this moment, I have a headache, a stomach ache, and I'm dragging my feet due to lack of food.
So you're here in Santa Cruz for a relief from the deputies, you said?
I come to the city of Santa Cruz to get away from the sheriff. Now, I have a particular spot that I go to, and the other night I noticed there was a Santa Cruz PD sitting in my spot. I'm like, oh, now what? So we went to the beach.
Well, and then, of course, you got a ticket for smoking on the beach, correct?
No.
You're not a smoker.
I am a smoker.
Have you been hassled for smoking?
No. I've only been back from Napa 11 months. So
we can get a cop to hassle you, kind of get the feel of the town.
No, please don't. I've got enough stress. I'm about ready to have a stroke and a heart attack.
On top of your other problems.
Correct.
Well, anything you want to add to this?
I think that this community needs to take care of its community because I transport 80 miles and I'm seeing a lot of foreigners come in here from other countries. They've only been here a year, year and a half, and they're doing better than anyone in this town of Santa Cruz. They look better.
You probably bought some money with them.
I don't know. They're driving new cars. They got nice clothes on. And they're asking me where I think is a good place to be buying property. And these people only been in this country for a year and a half, 2 years. I
recommend people to you for a property assessment?
Property assessment? No.
I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't recommend Santa Cruz to buy property. I took an investment class in 1992 when my mother died. My investment teacher came from New York. He owned 26 properties. He said that these places here aren't worth the cost of materials, let alone the cost that they're being charged to live in them. And this problem has not been resolved. It has gotten extremely out of hand worse.
And we have been talking with
Candace Devlin.
Thank you, Candace.
You have a great day.
Yeah, you're going on the radio, kid, so watch out. Now we know you
are. I don't care. I love these things they put on cars right here. After you reach 60, they become very handy to get up.
There you go. Thank you, Candace.
All right, you guys take care. Please don't send no police officers my way.
Certainly not.
You were born about 3.5 million years ago in a valley warm and fair near the equator. You had hair all over your feet, and you grew to 3 or 4 feet. You were even taller generations later. Fifty thousand years ago, you left Africa, and you stayed 10,000 years in Central Asia, with no saddle and no stirrup. You walked all the way to Europe, so I'll see your race card, partner, and I'll raise ya. Rift Valley, where we left our mom and dad, drifted out across the world and messed it up real bad. We're all one family, no matter where we roam. Rift Valley drifters drifting home, genome by genome. Yeah, partner. If you're one of them grassroots protesters who hates socialism and just wants his country back, chances are you're of Western European heritage. A member of haplogroup R1B, perhaps. With ancient brothers and sisters in other haplogroups who populated Australia and China and crossed over from Siberia to Alaska to open a casino in Broken Bow, Oklahoma. And you can follow your tracks. Track yourself all the way back to the mitochondrial Eve. Great, great 5,000 times great grandmama of all 6+ billion of us. And if you do, partner, well, maybe then you'll stop acting like such a friggin' Neanderthal. Every Western boy and girl is descended from Mohammed. And the first real, real Americans were Russian and then Indian. And Barack Obama's cousin is Dick Cheney. Well, now, doesn't that make for an interesting town hall discussion? Rift Valley, where we left our mom and dad, drifted out across the world and messed it up real bad. We're all one dysfunctional family, no matter where we nomads roam. Rift Valley drifters drifting home, genome by genome. Take a look inside your genes and partner, then you will see we've all got a birth certificate from Kenya. Serengeti.
Wow, I almost fell asleep on that one. That's Rift Valley Drifters, another one from the 14-song album of Real Americans. So at the last Huff meeting, which was yesterday, actually, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, we had a rep from the Mental Health Clients Action Network, MHCAN, which I've talked about a bit in the past and been concerned about the contraction of services by this client-run group that has been forced upon it to some extent by the city of Santa Cruz. And one of these representatives who came to our meeting spoke to us about a number of issues, and I kind of was encouraged to raise a number of issues myself, which I'm hoping she or perhaps someone else at MHCAN will look into, concerning the rights of folks who are labeled mental patients. And one of these issues has to do with the possible expansion of conservatorship that's happening statewide and maybe happening in this county as well. It's a little unclear to me whether the SB 1045 immediately pertains here or not. But here's a story from Berkeley, written in the Berkeley Daily Planet by Raisa Small for Senior and Disability Action and other groups. She writes, as a coalition of community groups who work with people with disabilities, seniors, and homeless people, we strongly oppose implementation of SB 1045 in San Francisco. We agree we have a crisis of homeless people living and dying on our streets, but an expansion of involuntary conservatorship is the wrong approach and will do nothing to address the underlying drivers of psychiatric disabilities, substance abuse, and homelessness. Conservatorship is a serious matter. It takes away every single one of a person's civil liberties, their ability to make decisions about what happens to their body, their pet, where they live, what they eat, how they spend their time and their money. Our government should not ignore the long and shameful history of institutionalization, involuntary sterilization, and other forced treatment of people with disabilities. As Susan Misner, Disability Rights Program Director of the National ACLU, stated, conservatorship is the biggest deprivation of civil rights aside from the death penalty. Current law under the Landrieman-Petras Short Act was carefully constructed to balance safety and personal liberties and centers on whether the individual is harmful to themselves or others or cannot care for themselves due to their mental illness. This new law adds addiction to mental illness and focuses instead on whether someone has been detained more than 8 times. It therefore moves the reason for the conservatorship away from medical and safety necessity to police intervention. It is police who 5150 individuals, and this law would give them great incentive to repeatedly detain people who are generating complaints or when political pressure is applied. A punitive approach to mental health is both inhumane and ineffective, not to mention unconstitutional. SB 1045 has become a political strategy to address homeless people with mental health disabilities. This strategy relies on the false narrative that people choose not to get services when in reality services are not available. There are 1,060 individuals on the single adult shelter reservation wait list and 8,000 households on the wait list for public housing. When this data was last tracked, there were 500 people waiting to get methadone and substance abuse residential treatment. And I would wager you that we have a similar situation here in Santa Cruz, though I'd love to get someone to look into these stats and try to find out what that waiting list situation is. I did call the River Street Shelter. I don't think I mentioned this earlier in the show, but I may have. And they are a group with a waiting list, which, because of a change in our local sleeping ban ordinance, even previous to the Boise versus, Miller decision or Martin decision, I can never get the name right, it provided for a kind of an escape hatch for people who, they would, while being harassed and hassled by police and told they'd have to move, would still be able to avoid paying off a ticket or even going to court for a ticket, although they would get the ticket, if they were on the waiting list of the River Street Shelter. Well, when I spoke to Tracy today at the River Street Shelter at their number, 459-6644, try it out yourself, she told me the waiting list had dozens of people on it and was closed. So there is no way, even theoretically now, to get on the waiting list and avoid the citation being sent to court. So not only do we have a federal court decision that essentially states camping tickets and resting tickets, not just camping tickets, resting was another issue in Boise, are illegal unless there's a shelter place for people to go, which there is not at the present time. And it looks as if with the parks being fenced off, there's going to be even less area for people to go to. Then you have a situation where it is simply a violation of the a basic violation of human rights, and one that's acknowledged even in our courts, but not by our city manager, not by our police chief, not by our city council. But wait, you may say, oh no, they're not being given sleeping ban tickets so much anymore. True, less so than in the past, though they're still being given them if you look at the recent stats at the Public Safety Committee's Monday hearing presented by Chief Mills himself. But more for, as I said before, and I have to emphasize this again because it's the reality and it's important, more for, quote, trespass, more for, quote, being in a closed area. That is, any areas that the city deems have too many homeless people over there, so they close it. So people that are using these areas for rest and refuge find themselves criminalized under laws that the city, I guess, theorizes they can't be directly dragged into court and successfully fined or enjoined against. But let's finish the story about mental health and this new conservator's law in Berkeley and San Francisco that concerns the writer. SB 1045 has become a political strategy to address homeless people with mental health disabilities. This strategy relies on the false narrative that people choose not to get services. San Francisco's performance audit of behavioral health services in April of 2018 reads, clients accessing psychiatric emergency services often have dual mental health and substance use disorders and experience homelessness. Linking these clients to services on discharge is important because without service linkage, these clients are at risk of not only decompensating mentally, but of also resorting to alcohol and substance abuse after being discharged. And yet, of people discharged from psychiatric emergency services in 2017, nearly 40% were not offered any services. That's up north. No idea about the stats down here, and I don't even know if they've been looked at. The conservatorship process is failing us now because there are not adequate services or placements for the individual, and this new law does not change that. It just makes it easier to churn people through the system. Implementation would be a much greater challenge than has been recognized by government leaders. Conservatorship is a serious commitment and responsibility, making government liable for providing extensive care for conservatees with the same level of resources that is currently not adequate to meet the needs of the community. Where is the housing going to come from when someone is conserved from the street? Where are the services coming from? Who will get that housing or services because the conserved person does? Or who will not get those services because the conserved person does get them? Implementation of SB 1045 encourages police action and criminalization of people who are homeless and mentally ill. To be eligible, people need to be detained through a 5150 action 8 times, which gives police an incentive to use 5150 on people with mental illness and substance abuse. In San Francisco, almost 60% of people shot and killed by police have mental health disabilities. And, of course, that was true here in Santa Cruz. 100% of those shot by the Santa Cruz police, well, fatally shot in 2017 or 2016, Sean Arlt, had a mental disability. In addition, being detained and then conserved could turn into a homeless person's only option for accessing housing and services. Before we take away civil liberties in a city that prides itself on being a pioneer in civil rights, San Francisco needs to provide housing and voluntary mental health and substance abuse services. Ditto. And apparently there's a proposition on the San Francisco ballot that will provide housing and services, and those solutions are what this series of groups suggests rather than involuntary conservatorship. And, of course, something is similar here. I don't know if we have a conservatorship coming up on the roster, but it and Laura's Law, which I've talked about in the past and we'll talk about again, are ongoing threats which essentially are useful tools for the police. Always a danger in a growing police state. That's going to be it for this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We're going to go out in another tune by Roy Zimmerman. I will be back again on Sunday. See you on Saturday if you want to come down to the 5 o'clock Food Not Bombs meeting as to what to do to deal with the fencing and the criminalization of homeless people and the shutdown of shelter services and the blatant lying, bizarre policy changing, peculiar concealment of real agendas that's going on with the city council and the city manager. Join me. And if you'd like, listen again on Sunday at 9:30. Correction, we're going to hear a little Randy Rainbow before we say goodnight.
I'm here in majestic Kenya, famous birthplace of not Barack Obama, with none other than the one and only First Lady of the United States, if you don't count Mike Pence, Melania Trump. Mrs. Trump, we don't often get to hear from you. In a few words, what can you tell us about Melania Trump?
I'm a mother and a First Lady.
Great.
I'm not happy in the White House. I don't even live there. I'm miserable in my marriage.
That's enough, sweetie.
I'm out of touch. There are so many things. I don't know where to start.
Well, why don't we start with a topic everyone is wondering about? The jacket. Do I look cute or is it too tight? Because it's new and you didn't say anything.
Yes, I'm enjoying it.
Okay, good. No, you always have the best taste in fashion, and you know how cruel people can be on the internet.
That's why my Be Best initiative is focusing on social media and online behavior. I could say I'm the most bullied person on the world.
The most bullied person in the world?
One of them. If you really see what people are saying about me.
Well, if I may, Mrs. Trump, allow me to impart some wisdom. A certain stunning Slovenian First Lady ripped off Michelle Obama, reworded, slapped on a T-shirt made in China, and tried to pass off as her own.
Just be...
I never...
Shut up.
Best.
Just be best. Just be better than the rest. Put your shiny new self-righteous phony slogan to the test. Don't hold back. Don't fall short. Don't stand up or show support. Or what's real or fair or true. You really don't care, girl, now do you? Stand your ground, lead with grace, and try not to make that face. When they question what you said or how you dressed, be kind and virtuous, and also tell your husband to be best. Not the best, just be best. You hear that, boys and girls? Don't be crass, don't be cruel, unless on Twitter or in school. Keep your temper and remember our First Lady's golden rule. Contradict, solid proof, be indignant and aloof. Human dignity? Dismiss it. Be despotic, be complicit. Don't unite, just divide. Then ignore the other side when they exercise their privilege to protect. Go on now, be outrageous. Throw small kids in cages. Be the best. You look stressed. If I were you, I'd be depressed. Just be best. Just be best.
We can. We should be best.
Good is not the best, and if you're better, you're still less than being best. So be the best as best you could. Don't be not as good as being better. Better might as well be not so good. Bet I'm not the first to say that better is the worst when better's less not good and worser than not great. So, go on. Don't not be not more better. Lest you should regret it. Best be, fuck it, just forget it. Just be best, just be best. Just forget those you've oppressed. Blame your spurs, use ethnic slurs, then just defer to Kanye West. Disregard, disobey, and if things don't go your way, side with any sex offender if it serves your own agenda. Brush your teeth, wash your clothes, and stick up for all your bros. Then go mocking all the ladies they molest. Pretend to give a shit and be a hypocrite, but be the best. Just be best, just be bop, just be bop, just be bop. Just be best till you're all under arrest. Just defend until the end while you pretend you're not their class. Be a snob, be elite, be a liar and a cheat. We're enamored of your glamour, so we'll just forgive your grammar and be best. Just be best. Let your worst self be expressed. Thumb your nose until your foes have acquiesced.
And don't be nice or lawful. Just be best at being.
being awful.
Just be back.
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 Let me get to state. You put the lime in your coconut, you take them all.